Hello, folks. Welcome to episode 42 of the show. Sharad, this time again, I have called it a show.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks recurring now.
I think we should make this a thing now. Welcome to episode 42 of Long Shots, our weekly podcast, where we discuss everything under the sun, but try to focus a bit more on business and finance. And lately, we have also been speaking to a lot of other people who are into business and finance at their own end. And it's been quite a ride. So this is Nikhil Arora, and I have with me Sharad Tupran. Before I hand it over to Sharad, friendly reminder to all our listeners, do feel free to subscribe to our channel. We are streaming on Deezer, Spotify, Apple, iTunes. So do subscribe so that you get the nice little notification every time an episode goes live. And yes, Sharad, how's it going, man?
It's good. I can't complain. I'm very excited that subsequent to last week, where we had someone from United Nations talking about ecological economics, today we have someone from FinTech. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Saman Sikka, who's the founder of Squirrel, which is a FinTech platform. And thanks for your time, and welcome to Transfin.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Good. And we'd like to begin a little bit with what Squirrel does. But before that, I see on your LinkedIn profile, like, you've got experience on the asset management side. I see Axis Bank and Goldman Sachs Asset Management. And I see some kind of intuitive transition from that angle to fintech space. So let's start by beginning about your background and journey.
So I've been in financial services for about 2 decades, predominantly with asset management companies. And I've worked with true-blooded global firms like AIG, Templeton, Goldman.
Yeah.
And then I've also had the pleasure of working with Indian large brands like Axis. And I know that fintech and startup are the buzzwords today. But when I look back at my career, not by design, but I think it happened like that.
Yeah.
Most of my stints were part of a startup, but a brick and mortar startup, and not what you would today call as a startup, which is tech infused.
Yeah.
So I was part of founding teams at most of my stints. And therefore, what I've really learned about myself is that I loved building businesses from scratch, building teams and scaling them. What really happened is at my last stint at Axis, I got exposed to the world of tech, and it kind of took me by surprise at the potential of what could happen at the intersection of financial services and technology.
Okay.
And I personally feel that fintech is a wrong word to describe it. Probably a right way to describe it is tech in fin.
Okay.
So at the large end, what all of us are trying to do is to transform financial services and solve for the biggest challenges that financial services as an industry, as an ecosystem has had. And if I look at that challenge, if I had to pinpoint one challenge from an India perspective,
yeah,
I think the biggest challenge that financial services has had is access.
Okay.
We're a country of 1.3 billion people, and I think we've not had a good model to take these brilliant services and products that we have to the constituents of our country. So access has been the biggest problem.
Mm-hmm.
It has not been democratized.
Yeah.
Right? If you look at the way the ecosystem has flourished, they have basically gone after the low-hanging fruit. Some simpler way to describe this is that I divide the world into two halves, stay rich and get rich.
Yeah.
So if you look at who's got access to these products and services, it is the stay rich population of the country which has got access to these products and services.
Sure.
Now, if you go back and try and find out, we're a smart bunch of people, why is it that we've not been able to solve for this problem? I think the largest problem or the reason for this to happen in this fashion is the physicality of doing business.
Okay.
Now, imagine that you're a branch, you're a bank, you're a branch. You're trying to provide basic products and services, banking services and products to the people. How would you really think traditionally? You would think, okay, I feel this is a locality. Does it have enough number of people who have large amounts of money which they can place as deposits in my branch? Because I will have to own, or rather rent, a prime piece of real estate in that locality on the ground floor, easily accessible to open a branch.
Yes.
Then I will staff it with people.
Sure.
And then I want people to come and place their trust and money with me so that this branch becomes profitable.
Yeah.
So what has that led to is that A, the target audience has been very clearly defined with people who can place these deposits or who can buy ticket sizes or something that justifies that investment of what I call ROTI.
Yeah.
Acronym for return on time invested and money invested.
Okay.
To say if I'm a bank, I'll open a branch, I'll put 10 people, I'll put all these services. I need to have an X number of deposits so that I can earn so much money, so that I can justify the salaries and the charges for these, for running this operation.
Sure.
Which has meant that a certain strata of the society has been completely ignored.
Mm-hmm. That kind of skews access.
Absolutely.
And you think that technology can play a role in making sure that that can get democratized?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing that technology does, while it is described by different people, the techies, in a very different manner, but the way I look at technology is that it democratizes access.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you can run a product or a service sitting at one location, and given the fact that internet and what we call Jam, you know, Jandan accounts, mm-hmm. Aadhaar, mobile, penetration. You can really go to a target customer and offer him a product and service, cutting down that entire, you know, metric of, you know, targeting a certain strata, ticket size, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So to that extent, whether a guy puts 100 rupees or 1 crore, actually the heavy lifting is being done by the customer himself by entering those extra zeros.
Right.
The platforms are democratizing it by saying, you know what, we don't necessarily care
sure.
what is your ticket size as long as the use case is solved for.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, like that's a very, I mean, I guess that's probably the philosophical backbone of your professional trajectory as well, right? In terms of moving away from, I would say, big institutions to getting into the pure play startup space, looking at a retail platform. But like, we can obviously talk about the space, but before that, I just want to step back and like talk about you. Like, someone, you have an institutional background.
Sure.
Right. I mean, asset managers, like, yeah. You all know that, you know, you kind of deal with the...
I have a background in sell side equity research. So,
so you know,
he's a former investment banker. So he's sitting somewhere in there as well.
Sure.
Right. So, I mean, from a purely, you know, institutional client paradigm, you've decided to take a conscious move towards, you know, much more like retail, I would say, to a certain extent, mass market, quote unquote.
Mass retail.
Mass retail, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the dynamic is completely different, right?
Yeah.
In terms of even the basic level of awareness, of understanding the interface of these products. What kind of, was it this kind of a philosophical question which made you think that, okay, you know, there's a big access problem, let me do something in that? Or was it like a more, I would say, because that is a philosophical and I would say partly a emotional driver to
sure.
go towards a business.
Sure.
Or was it more on the other end that you saw that, okay, there's a big viable market opportunity that needs to be tapped out and my personal skills, because in the beginning, I guess Squirrel is all, you know, kind of is driven by the founding team, right?
Right.
And everything kind of picks up later. So what kind of made you take this step?
So I think going back to that time where I got exposed to the world of technology and the potential that it brings with it, and the fact that this challenge existed. Clearly, one was driven and motivated by the opportunity to create a large value. And what you call as a large institution today, they all have humble beginnings. Everybody has started small, right? And I think that the world order is also going to change.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a large challenge. Having worked in these large institutions, respectfully, I think they have their own challenges. And the fact that that structure itself, a corporate structure itself, is today becoming redundant, if I may use that word, because the structure does not lead to innovation. It is not leading to higher productivity. So it is, and lot of corporate leaders are actually aware about it. So the order is changing. There is an opportunity to create large value.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, for a country like ours, there is a huge underserviced, underpenetrated market that you can really build, if I may say so, an institution of future
sure.
around.
Right.
So I think that is what the whole vision is.
Which is probably more decentralized, which is probably more
platform thinking, right? To say that, and that I think the platform thinking is also a great new evolution that one should be aware of. And one of the core drivers of platform thinking is also open architecture. I think in the past, if you look at it, the institutional thinking has been to say, I would be the manufacturer, I will own everything. And if you just try and change that perspective. So here is what was essentially happening. Earlier, let's say the aggregators or the distributors were representing the manufacturer to the consumer. And I think the new opportunity is, how do you represent the consumer to the manufacturers?
Right. Yeah. That's very interesting you're putting it.
Right. So I think the true paradigm shift is that when you're a platform, you don't care about the product manufacturer per se. What you're trying to do is you're trying to think consumer in and representing the consumer to say, all right, this is a consumer that I have. This is his problem statement. This is the use case. Therefore, now let me find the most relevant, optimal product for him to solve his problem.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when you become the manufacturer, you get tied down to a certain use case, to a product, right? To a design.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're looking at it from a platform, you don't want to be bogged down with that. You want to be bogged down with the consumer's problem and should be able to be nimble enough to be able to come up with a solution to solve this problem.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. And we think about it from a e-commerce standpoint. We've thought about it from a social media standpoint as well. And you're seeing that thing. But when it comes to fintech, it's a very different angle because the products are display a heightened level of homogeneous in terms
Absolutely.
So that becomes a challenge then, right? Commoditized, yeah.
Absolutely.
So that is the key challenge here, right?
Fantastically put. I think, what has happened is that in this journey, so there are a couple of perspectives I want to lay out. One, why fintech I feel is different from the rest of the, let's say, a food tech or an e-com or an ed tech. Is I think there is a very, very large regulatory overhang on this space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are already, in some sense, entry barriers. That is obviously, you can't just dreamy-eyed think of a product in the night, work for 7 days, take a product, and really touch the consumer's money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, there is a huge level of a regulatory challenge that one needs to come with. And therefore, far more level of seriousness, capital, evolution that you need to really launch a product or a service. The other problem is, which you rightly enumerated, and I'm remembering one of my earlier conversations before launching the product or even designing the product, we met about 400-500 of our target audience, one-on-one in groups of 2, 3, 4, 5. And I remember this one particular guy, I was generally trying to ask him, what is so fun about shopping? Why do you like these e-com platforms so much? And I really remember it very vividly where he said, you know what, everything is about me. The time is of my choosing, color is of my choosing, size of my choosing, payment mode of my choosing, delivery date of my choosing, and delivery mode also of my choosing.
Yeah, right.
And when I took all these questions and tried to superimpose on the financial services examples, I found that we were basically offering the same product to him and his dad.
Yeah.
Right? So we were actually then saying, you know what, this is a product, you should buy it. Whereas he, when I'm saying he means the consumer of today and the future, he's not willing to buy something just because I'm telling him to buy it.
Yeah.
He's a DIY user. He wants to be involved in the decision making, right? And he wants control on the experience.
Yeah.
So pretty much those insights is what we took back at Squirrel. And to be fair, we're not a manufacturer, so we've not been able to change the products too much.
Yeah.
But what we've been able to do is to build that layer of experience on top of those products before we really straight away show the product.
And that's a very fascinating point because, you know, when you were mentioning earlier about like if you're a bank, you have to open a branch and that cost kind of levers down your return expectation. I mean, if you look at like countries like, for instance, the UK, I mean, we have seen 10 years of challenger banks there, which are pretty much branchless banks.
Absolutely.
Right? But it's a mixed bag of stories, right? You have a successful case studies coming out of that particular thing. But you also have big issues coming up, because when you go into branchless banking, the entire onus of information then pretty much falls on the customer.
Correct.
Right. And which probably in an e-commerce product doesn't make that bigger role.
Right.
But when it comes to a financial services proposition, you obviously have a risk of mis-selling and all those kinds of things.
Huge ramifications.
Right. So I mean the regulatory overhang from that perspective is understandable, and that's where I guess, like for instance, you not being a manufacturer, I guess a lot of your emphasis goes on making sure that how whatever is actually being sold by the manufacturer via your platform is presented in the most succinct, information-rich manner, so that the customer can make the best decision. Correct?
Absolutely, make informed choices, and it is relevant to him, right? I may decide to sell a certain amount of product because of revenue considerations, or even my personal love and passion for a certain type of a product.
Right.
Yeah.
But fact of the matter is, if you have to shed all those inhibitions and love and basically align yourself with the customer to say whether he really needs it or not.
So branchless doesn't mean just distribution. Branchless also means distribution plus
absolutely
that extra
level of
layer.
Absolutely. And that is what is going to be the future. If you're going to just make an offline user an online user, it's probably not going to cut ice.
Well, that's the entire philosophy behind Digital India from the government standpoint. Let's just make PDFs and hope that to work. But I mean, that doesn't work.
It doesn't. I think a certain part of that whole movement on, I am not somebody of an authority to say is it the right thing or not. But I think the data is in front of all of us that, a certain type of adoption driven purely on cashbacks.
Yeah.
May show us some short-term bouncy and some results,
right.
But will it really drive the behavior in a certain manner over a longer period of time is something that we get to see, because a lot of the players in the ecosystem say that these are my customers.
Yeah.
Right? But I believe a lot of them are actually customers for everybody, and they are driven more by a certain incentive rather than any loyalty to the platform or
right.
to the use case, or is it actually leading to any habit formation?
Yeah.
So I think those are the challenges that we as an economy have. And I just want to just quickly add, because I think this example and this discussion, whenever we have a fintech in India, we very quickly navigate to the UK, the US.
Sure.
I think one very big fundamental difference that, or a challenge that we have in our country, is about financial literacy.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of these markets, literacy levels, basic literacy levels itself are way higher.
Sure. Yeah.
And then at least people have been using banks for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Right? So don't forget that before the present dispensation, the government came in the last, the first mandate that they got, one of the schemes that they ran was a Jan Dhan bank account opening scheme. So it took a prime minister of a country after 67 years of independence to launch a scheme to open bank accounts for all the constituents in our country.
Yeah.
So imagine that we had a large part of our customer base, so to say, who didn't have access to
a
basic banking product.
Yeah.
I can tell you stories which will shock everybody. But fact is that those... facilities were not available. So I think we have our own challenges with literacy and how we solve them and the scale that we have.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe some of these incentives and push may work to kind of take the level.
I mean, there's data on this point, right? I mean, I think there was a S&P Global Financial Literacy Survey, right? Which kind of asks, I think, four questions. Compounding and, looking at inflation versus interest rate. There are, I think, four fundamental financial literacy questions. And apparently, I think India within BRICS was the last, 25% was the average literacy. So, I mean, that level of, and I mean, it's not just, we all probably are aware of that within our own personal scenarios, right? I mean, if you, mostly the retirement planning in our country starts when people hit 60.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is probably the...
No, there is no concept of retirement planning. If
you ask
our parents
and
you ask them what are their top goals, their top goals in life was that I should be able to give good education to my kids. I should get them married. After that, if I have any money, I want to own one house in my lifetime. Now, by the time they complete all these three goals, retirement is a leftover.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Most of India, the government guys, people who work for the government service employees, they thankfully have had provident fund, gratuity.
Some sort of protection.
So some sort of forced savings, which is locked up, which is not accessible to them, which is actually helping them.
Yeah.
And not to mention the fact that last two decades, India has really prospered. I think people have made a lot of money in their vocations, whether it is government servants, you look at their dearness allowance and so on and so forth. I think everybody has become economically more prosperous.
Yeah.
So there is that little bit of nest, if I may say so, that has got created. Whether this will happen for all of us in the next 20, 30 years, I for one have a serious doubt. And I think we are looking at a very serious...
I guess because there's a difference between doing it passively and doing actively managing your money, right? I mean, like healthcare is something which is going to be a big burden in the future, right? So that itself, when it comes to hitting a particular age of maturation, becomes a big factor. But, you know, coming back to like Squirrel, like I'm not going to describe it the way you guys describe it.
Sure.
I'm going to describe it the way Business Standard and its article describe it.
Oh, okay.
Right? So you tell me whatever is your view on that.
They
call Squirrel a DIY investment app helping young Indians from urban and semi-urban areas save by the concept of micro-saving.
Absolutely.
So
that's one way to say it.
Yeah.
If you ask me, why do we exist? I think we exist to make the young Indians' relationship with money better.
Sure.
I think that's the way I like to describe it, because today the world is about social media and relationships and connections. So I just feel that if you ask a youngster today, how is your relationship with your parents, with your girlfriend, with your friends, he has a way to describe it. If you ask him, what is your relationship with money?
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, that relationship is strained for most of them.
More the merrier.
Right? For most of them, they find it really hard. Cumbersome.
Yeah.
The fact that the ecosystem talks jargon does not help. They talk a different language altogether, you know. They don't understand. And the one is that they don't understand. Two, that they have no need to understand. You know, they basically want to know what you are saying. How is it going to help my life?
Yeah.
How is it going to help me lead a better life or to be better?
Yeah.
Right? Is it helping me go for my next vacation? Is it helping me buy that? Go for that backpacking trip or buy that new...
It's a more experience-oriented generation.
Right. So, you know, so to that extent, there is a critical need to change the conversation, change the language, simplify it.
Yeah.
I come from that ecosystem. All three of us come from that ecosystem. I must tell you, if you analyze it from a distance, and I've also had to, you know, really cut myself away to understand and come to say this, I think we take pride in making things more conscious. So I have gone on sales calls with like private bankers who would go and meet a customer, and they will talk about, you know, oh, this Brexit is happening and this is going to happen, and therefore this, you know, so what I'm realizing is that they are trying to drive a knowledge arbitrage wedge between themselves and the consumers.
Okay.
And the consumer, after a little time, says, you know what, he seems to know more than I know. So whatever he's saying must be right. Let's just go with it.
Yeah.
And this, by the way, I'm talking about the stay-rich population who is literate and so-called makes enough money. And this is about investing their disposable income. Younger consumer has a very low attention span.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that Time magazine report which says the attention span of a millennial today is less than a goldfish.
Okay.
Right? Goldfish is at 8 seconds.
8 seconds, yeah, that I remember.
Right? So, so the fact is that you've got those 7 seconds to make a dent in his mind. And therefore, it needs to be reimagined. So, we are trying to I make that relationship better?
But there are two things here, right? And one is that, A, do you think, like, obviously young Indians or millennials core to your proposition.
Sure.
Do you think that their overall financial behavior is different from the generations before? Or do you think it's more a question of packaging a product? That for them, the messaging needs to be different.
Told in a different way. And I'll just add one more thing. Because there are challenges when you're selling something intangible and something where the returns will be realized after a period of time. That those two elements of time and intangible, they complicate things as well, right? It's sort of what Nikhil is alluding to.
No, perfect. So I think your questions are bang on. So 3 points here. And I think it is not either or, it is a bit of all three.
Yeah.
Right? So first of all, their use cases are very different. They want to travel.
Yeah.
Right? When I talked about our parents and the generation before, they wanted to buy a house and settle down.
Yeah.
Now, settling down is not something that comes naturally to these guys, right? So they want to travel. If they are in Kanpur, they want to go in Delhi, work in Delhi. If they're in Delhi, they want to go and work in Bombay. If they're in Bombay, they want to go and work in Bangalore. Next, they want to go and work in Singapore. They want to go and work in Hong Kong. They want to go to London. So, it's a race. It's a different species who's not satisfied easily.
Yeah.
They want more, right? Point one. Point two, I think they get a lot of backlash from all of us. Oh, you guys are short-sighted. You don't think enough. I think they're extremely smart. I think they're extremely smart race. They have a very good handle on what they want. You know, when we were growing up, we didn't have all these choices.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of choices. They don't have to solve for the basic, Maslow's need hierarchy. The bottom, they don't have to solve for the bottom one. They're already a little above that. And therefore, they are trying to aspire for the next, if I may say, the...
I think that's a parallel in the US as well, right? You had the baby boomers and then you had... I mean, the fundamental starting point was different.
So, first and foremostly, their use cases are very different. Right? They don't want to save for buying a house. They want to save for travel.
Yeah.
You'll be surprised on our platform. Vacation is the number one goal that people save for.
Oh, really?
So it is coming very clearly. To the other point that you made, therefore, the corollary is that you need to reimagine the products also. Right? Let me give you another example. On the asset management side, and we had to work with a couple of asset managers on this, the minimum ticket sizes in some of these products was 1,000 rupees, 5,000 rupees, right? And we've now worked with a couple of them to drop it to 1 rupee.
Oh, really?
To say that, look, some things don't change. We have a historical benchmark to go by. When shampoos came to India, it was an alien product category. The FMCG industry tried to sell a bottle for 30, 40 bucks, whatever it was. And the consumer said, I'm using a soap bar. Why the hell should I invest, which is coming for 3, 4, 5 bucks, whatever. I don't want to buy a bottle for 50 bucks or 30 bucks. So they came up with that 1 rupee sachet, which is basically an adoption. Saying, you know what, this is 1 rupee, far lower than your soap bar. Try it. Use it for a day. See what this does. You like the experience. And then you do the math. Would you want to buy this 1 rupee every day? Or should you buy a bottle for 25 bucks or whatever?
So they
played it out like that. And they drew really the adoption. Today, I don't think people buy shampoos. Barring some use case when it comes in a toiletry kit or something like that. Sachet.
Yeah.
So I think we need to look at it exactly the same way from a product standpoint to say, can we remodel the products such that they perform, they help in adoption? You know, if we keep talking about the large population, but keep the product design...
Doesn't change. Yeah.
It's not going to lead to adoption. So there is that part that needs to be really addressed.
Yeah.
Very, very seriously. So I think it's a bit of... both of these.
Yeah. So, if you look at household savings rate in India, now that has been steadily declining for the last 10 years, right? I mean, I think last I checked, it's around 17%.
Yeah.
Right? And I think a decade ago, it was 25 plus.
Yeah, it was late 20s. Yeah, right.
Now,
I remember it was above 30 also at a point in time when I started my career.
Yeah. Right. So, behavior has changed, right? And that behavioral change has become more aspirational, as I imagine. There's more focus on spending.
Sure.
There is less focus on saving. And so your answer to that is that why don't we deconstruct the product itself to kind of fit in that new paradigm, right? How do you guys do it?
So again, we are, and there is a conundrum for the economy as well, right? The economy will do well if the consumption increases. So there is a larger agenda that we should increase consumption. I see data points where they say, Indians don't take enough loans, credit card debt to GDP in US is so high, it's very poor in India. Automobile debt to GDP is so high in US, Europe, it's so poor in India. So I think, yes, there is a consumption story that needs to fuel the economy. Point very, very well taken. Products and services need to be bought. But I think the steady drop in savings is a little bit of a dangerous trend for us. I don't know where we should arrest it. But what we are trying to do...
Probably in the background of not having that kind of a social I would say, protection
right.
network, right? Correct. I mean, in a country where you actually had that, yeah. okay, you spend more, fine. Correct. But in our context, you have to kind of, I
absolutely.
Guess,
absolutely.
Yeah, sorry, please.
So what I was trying to say is, so at Squirrel, what we're trying to do is fight that battle.
Yeah.
By saying that, you know what would you typically tell a person who doesn't save? A dad or a grandparent would say, stop spending.
Spend less.
Right? Yeah.
Spend less. This yeah. is the easiest way to do that. Yeah. Now, this generation, you can't tell them. They hate it when somebody else tells them what to do, and especially when they tell them not to do something.
Yeah.
Right? So we've reverse engineered this to say that why don't we embed ourselves in the consumption story?
Yeah. Okay.
So savings is a problem. You find it difficult to save. Why don't we embed ourselves in the spending? So every time you spend, we will invest the spare change.
Okay.
We will take the loose change and invest it. So the idea is, again, use automation, use technology for it, and take it down to 1 rupee.
Yeah.
So you took an Uber to work today. You spend 192 bucks. 8 bucks will be squirreled away. You took a colleague out for coffee. Bill was 262. 38 rupees will be squirreled away. You went and today bought a pair of Bata shoes for 1999. 1 rupee will be squirreled away. So the way it has been built is that A, it is DIY. So the user decides, okay, automate my this to the next 100 or next 500, do it daily or weekly, and then put a cap also. This also came from user feedback. The feature was not there on day zero, but saying if I go bonkers, save spending one day, you don't go bonkers. You put a cap saying on a daily limit or a weekly, okay. whatever I decide, there should be a cap. Once the user articulates all that, sets it up, then it gets automated from there on. So what we are trying to do is we're trying to build this as a habit. And then give a back-end, take the guilt away.
Yeah, yeah.
To say, you know what, I'm just spending, I'm not saving. Say, look, while I'm spending, there's also a little bit of a saving. And then you create a little bit of a stash at the end of the month.
So rather than like, rather than actually having a mental account, right. every month I'm going to save X, while actually you spend Y, you end up saving X or a proxy to X.
And can I just tell you this, and we've also done this. When we've asked the user, okay, how much do you think you can set aside every month?
Right.
The answer is, oh, this is very difficult.
Question.
You know, yeah. I end up getting cashed out every month. Tell him, okay, start with 1,000 rupees, 2,000. Oh, no, that's a large amount of money. Yeah. I can't do that. But what they are delighted at is when they do this, they're doing 3,500, 4,000, 2,800 rupees. So it is more than what they actually anticipated
uh-huh.
that they couldn't do
uh-huh.
but this loose change story is helping them get there
yeah.
and then it opens up to a minefield of opportunities
yeah
right and so there are guys who are now saying and the product roadmap is we're saying okay you have a debt problem
mm-hmm.
can I help you repay your debt by doing this
yeah
you're saying oh I can't repay my debt this month. I'm saying, okay, what, you know, your loose change, you will put it every day or a weekly basis, you send it to your credit card account.
Yeah.
Or to your housing loan account,
yeah,
home
yeah.
loan account, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So we will help you repay that. So I think the intent is there. And please understand, product is not the hero here. The use cases.
Sure. Yeah.
Now the discussion about whether I'm using a particular mutual fund product or a deposit product or A scheme or B scheme, that conversation becomes lame.
Sure. It's, yeah.
Right? And you're really trying to make an impact in the life of a user.
On the behavioral front, yes. And what I like is from a strictly like financial angle, to put it in this way, is like you've taken essentially a long position on spending. The more they're spending,
yeah.
you've essentially changed the narrative, right? You're long spending now.
Spoken more, like a two equity trader.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. And like this is just when I was in Canada, like this gentleman once told me, and I mean, I don't know how many people follow it, but in Canada, a lot of banks or a lot of employers pay 2 salaries a month.
They have a 15-day cycle.
15-day cycle, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. what a lot of these people had passed on rule of thumb from their forefathers or whatever was that you should use one of them should just go straight to the bank and you should be running the month with the other half.
Mm-hmm.
So there was intuitively being built of a 50% saving rate was trying to be built in with that rule of thumb. So I guess, Nikhil, well, I found it very interesting when you said like it's a packaging thing, right? And I think you were sort of on the same page
sure.
on that front. So it's things like that. And in the Indian context, like especially when we're seeing a consumer uptake, spending uptake. So I guess you're in the right spot, like in terms of just trying to play around with the packaging side, right?
So I think we found a niche.
Yeah.
And we're trying to grow that niche.
Yeah.
And like I said, we are extremely bullish about the opportunity that we have in hand.
Yeah.
But like any other business, I think this will take a good 5, 7, 10 years
sure.
to really go to a scale that we aspire to be.
Yeah.
I think to win any war,
mm-hmm.
And this is what I've learned from the investing world. Everybody says you make money in the long run, right? What I've learned through my career is that actually any long term is made up of many short terms.
Sure. Yeah.
So most people start with the right intention of going long, but they lose one of those battles of short term.
Yeah.
So any long term is equal to one short term plus another, plus another, plus another, plus another. And you need to make sure that you win the short term battles as well.
Yeah.
So I think we have to ensure that we sustain ourselves. We build an optimum product, optimum team. Make sure that in the early years we are frugal enough to be able to see the benefits of that long term.
Yeah. Right.
Nikhil and I also talk a lot about financial literacy, and the reason I sort of, you know, that there's some overlap in the kind of problems, we've actually gone and sort of given talks at some Delhi high schools and universities, sure. and engineering kids all the way up to engineering kids too. Some of them in the high school, and it is a problem. And I come from a personal realization as well. When I lived in the West, I could feel that people of my age bracket were far ahead in terms of being more prudent, understanding savings and understanding financial products there. And that is something like we try to, like, what do you think about school education curriculum system? So do you think there is a...
You've touched a raw nerve here.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in the fact that while we are putting so much focus on teaching physics, chemistry, math, biology to our, kids.
Yeah.
You have to understand what is it that they aspire for.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they want to become an engineer or a doctor or a computer scientist to be able to make money.
Yeah.
Right? And we run this program called Let's Talk Money, where we go to colleges, schools, corporates.
Yeah.
And we do these financial wellness workshop, right? Where the intent is to basically give them 4-5 key insights,
actionable
and secrets to being rich, right? And they feel it is so difficult and so on and so forth. So I think financial literacy is something that has to improve at the school level.
Yeah.
We need to improve the fact that, if it is after they get a job, after they start working, if you're not going to be able to... So this is this thing that I say that, the winners of the next century are not going to be the ones who make more money,
mm-hmm.
but the ones who manage what they make better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So if they don't do a good job about learning what they make, managing what they make, it's no point trying to make more money.
I mean, this is a very...
So getting rich is one part, but staying rich is a different ball game.
Yeah.
Like I asked this guy the other day. He had been working for, 6-7 years. I asked him, okay, how much is your salary now?
Yeah.
He said, now I make 12 lakhs. I said, okay, so when did you start working? 6 years ago. So I said, well, what salary did you start at? I started at 6 lakhs. In 6 years, I've doubled my this thing. So I said, okay, let's take an average of 8 lakhs or 9 lakhs, whatever it is. So 7 nines are 56 lakhs,
mm-hmm.
right? So how much do you have to show for it today?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, no, I don't have any savings. Yeah, I have a lakh of rupees.
But I've traveled around the world, he'd say. No, I'm just kidding.
I
know what you're saying, yeah.
So I think that realization, if it
the thing is that this is incremental, right? I mean, it's incremental, and I think that's what, from a pure behavioral economic standpoint as well, right? I mean, that's why things like mental accounting play such a major role, and sunk cost plays such a major role, right? That I think basic human psyche is not in sync with how those small steps over a long trajectory is going to make a tangible difference.
I think the big things that you talked about, compounding, I also asked these guys, okay, you know what? If you bought something at 10 rupees and the market crashes by 50%, what will happen? So they say it will become 5.
Hmm.
I said, okay, now how much return do you need to make this 5 go back to 10?
It's not double, it's more than that. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, fact of the matter is, it's more than 100%.
Yeah.
So, when you lost 50%, but now you need to make more than 100%.
Yeah. Magical base effect.
Yeah.
Right? So, those simple things, people are not able to, we're not equipping our kind of kids to be able to do that simple math.
Yeah.
The whole compound interest magic, the phenomena of inflation, right?
How it
is It is crazy. You know, what is the most, what is our top line inflation number? Somebody will say, oh, we are at 5.38 or whatever that number is, right? But you look at real life inflation over the last two decades, the most expensive education.
Yeah.
I pulled out the data of just to kind of categorize it. I am Ahmedabad, right? It used to be 2.5 or 3 lakhs 15, 20 years ago. Now it is 20 lakhs. That is a CAGR of more than 20%.
Yeah.
So healthcare you talked about. I mean, it is crazy. I don't know how we are going to be able to, you know, we manage our healthcare costs given the fact that the vectors are going multiplying. Now you have a dengue, chikungunya, X and Y. Every 4 years, we have three more of these coming up.
Yeah.
So I think the importance of risk. So, and again,
I mean, speaking of risk, like you mentioned, I know that's a, because as soon as you said that, okay, you are trying to solve the problem by linking consumption to savings, albeit in a small way, in a big way, multiple ticket sizes,
sure,
right? So I'm sure at the manufacturer's end, you must have, I'm pretty sure in the beginning, you must have had a long process to just negotiate to make sure that the manufacturers are even okay to take those smaller marginal ticket sizes. But I guess now that all of that has been to a fair bit stabilized, what is the asset side here? What is all that money going into?
So I think we talked about being open architecture. We talked about being consumer in, representing the consumer to the manufacturer. So I think the availability of products has never been a challenge. The industry has a full length and breadth of products available. What we've really built is a relevance engine on top of it. To say that if a consumer is coming, and this is my favorite example, if a consumer is coming and saying 2020 March, I want to buy a Harley Davidson.
Okay.
And another consumer is saying, and I need 5 lakhs, save 5 lakhs for it. And another one comes and says, you know what, I want to get married in March 2020 and I also need 5 lakhs. So first is you need to, at a broad level, understand that you can't be offering any risk to them.
Hmm.
Right? They both want to achieve that. You're in the business of getting them to their goals.
Sure.
You're not in the business of selling them products. Right? So that whole model engine has been built in a manner that we allocate only optimal risk. So I will not offer an equity product to a guy who's building.
But like at a product level, how do you, I mean, I'm assuming that there must be a fair bit of automation built in, right?
So there's a modeling built in, all algorithms built in.
Yeah.
And we've also tried to build in a little bit of NLP to understand, should the advice to the guy who wants to, it cannot be just math.
Yeah.
To say both of them need 5 lakhs, therefore give him the same solution.
Yeah.
Right? A bike can still hover around 2-3 months here and there, marriage cannot.
Sure.
So you need to build a little more predictability in the model that you're recommending.
But you must be taking some inputs, right? From the customer.
All this is
in the sense that you need to first assess what is the risk appetite.
Yeah.
You need to assess what is the savings goal.
Correct.
Right? And you must have automated that process through your app. And then through those inputs, you come back with
Whatever is the mix, right?
But can you like just walk us through that journey in the sense that for instance, if I am, you know, buying coffee for 260 and I top it up by 40, right, to put my money into, do I know what funds I'm putting my money in?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, there are regulatory guidelines around it. So you cannot get a guy to buy, let's say, a fund without showing him the product.
Sure.
And for the nuanced customer who wants to know, the entire portfolio of the fund should also be available. So the app interface has been built in a manner that any which way we need to take a sign off from the consumer on the product eventually that he is putting his money into.
Yeah.
When we talked about that spare change investment product today, that use case, we put it into a liquid fund today.
Okay. And then you...
So the reason we do that is because we want to build trust with our consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to... If these are... guy who's coming in for the in the savings pool for the first time, we want him to build trust with Squirrel. We want him to build trust with the process. We want him to build trust with the underlying use case also. So the reason we put it in liquid fund is that the returns there are not as volatile as the equity markets. They typically end up getting a positive arbitrage on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And two, the other proposition that we've offered is that money is available 24/7, 365 days within 2 minutes, up to 50,000 rupees.
So it's basically like you're putting it in a place you get a slightly better return than the bank.
Absolutely.
And it's flexible, and then you switch it into whatever the guy wants, or you draw it out.
Yeah. So whenever he wants that money back, so that money comes back into his bank account, like I said. And then you obviously have the other features which are about goals, where you come and articulate saying this is what my goal is.
Yeah.
So if you come up with a goal and say, you know what, in 10 years I want to start my own startup and I want to have a seed capital of 25 lakhs. So then the model then basically works back and kind of tells you, okay, for that kind of a goal, you need to save so much every month. And this is the risk appetite, and certain portfolios are actually shared with him. And the consumer then takes a call. And that is where then we do the modeling to say, okay, what asset allocation? If it's a 10-year goal, we want to offer him equity in that.
But how do you deal with the paperwork? You know, I mean, I have a funky RM, not very funky RM, but whatever. But
yeah.
I mean, in terms of for every switch, for every SIP redemption,
yeah.
I mean, I end up signing lots of forms.
So that is the first thing that we have taken away because of our target audience.
Yeah.
We were very clear that we wanted to have a paperless
sure.
onboarding process and a journey. So we built the entire tech engine. So while it may look simplistic on the front end,
yeah.
we own the entire back-end processing.
Mm-hmm.
So we are an open, when we say open architecture, we are registered with all the asset management companies, with all the registrar and transfer agents, through payment gateways to all the banks, because you may have a bank with Citibank and somebody may have it with a rural cooperative bank. So I need to be able to pull the money from both these banks and to be
sure.
able to take it to the relevant product providers. So it is a little bit of an ops intensive backend and tech intensive backend. So we built all that in-house. We built the transaction processing engine on the backend in-house. The eKYC, the KYC process is also now in-house. We
right.
do now video KYC.
Okay.
Hopefully soon Aadhaar is going to come back into play.
Yeah. But
right now we do a video KYC. So all that is bundled in the product. We do bank account verification. So there are a lot of people think online is easier, but actually sometimes it is more onerous also.
Yeah.
Right. So third party payments are not allowed. So bank account validation is now our responsibility.
Right.
So we make sure that we do all those checks and balances. Ooh. But yes, moral of the story is that the process is paperless and automated.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. And we're almost nearing an hour, but I definitely want to, we were chatting about it offline. I want to hear your take from a strictly business and commercial standpoint. Vernacular, like especially in a market like India, like it's a, you know, it just multiplies your market size if you go deeper into it. Is that something that, what are your thoughts on that?
So, you know, we've been live for a little over 2 years. And first year into our operations, we found that this whole premise that we had started with to say that technology is a great democratizer, we could see the early signs of that coming through. We saw almost 54% of our users were beyond the top 15 cities in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there is a lot of fight on customer acquisition, I would think, in the top 15 cities, the urban cities. We found that the smaller cities is where there is actually a big demand and supply mismatch and a gap. To really build a strong foothold, we took a bold decision. Why I say bold is that it's been more than a year. None of our competitors or peers, some very, very deeply funded with deep pockets, have ventured there. But we took a bold step of going vernacular. So we are now in English plus 8 languages.
Okay.
And our hypothesis was that and stepping back, that, you know, when we were studying, we were taught that India is a subcontinent. But actually, over the years, at least I have come to realize, if you really want to understand India, you have to think India is like a continent.
Yeah.
And then you compare ourselves with Europe.
Yeah.
And you will find that there are a lot of similarities that exist. 200 miles you drive, country changes, language changes, food changes. You superimpose it here, take the car, go any direction from here on national highway. In 200, 300 kilometers, the language will change. The consumer persona will change.
Yeah.
So we decided, how do we really, if the objective is financial literacy is poor and we want to simplify it, why don't we try and take it to them in the language of their preference?
Sure. Yeah.
Right. So that is what we have attempted to do. I think we've just scratched the surface because now this opens the floodgates from a content perspective.
Yeah.
Because now, now you've heard people say, the big guys say, data is the new oil. So I think content is the new story, which is going to really use this.
That's good to hear.
Right. to lead to the adoption
yeah.
of all this.
Yeah.
So while you may have a phone and you may have a free internet connection and all that, now content is needed to really drive adoption. And you and I know that the T-Series YouTube channel is amongst the number one or the number one, two channel in the world. It tells you that there is a consumer out there who has the phone, who needs, wherever he is finding content, he's getting online and consuming it. So now from our domain perspective, the responsibility is on us as to how soon can we create that content and engagement with that consumer. So we are really bullish on it. And we think we've just scratched the surface. Big challenge on now to build a completely new content library, so to say, for this consumer segment.
But I mean, coming to the overall business model side of things, you're looking at the nature of your product is such that it is it's not like blatantly saying invest or save. It is kind of for the lack of a better word, piggybacking off the consumption behavior of the customer.
Sure.
But in terms of ticket sizes, you've already mentioned that you are deconstructing it to make sure that it's smaller and more flexible, right?
Right.
But let's look at 5 or 10 years from now in terms of your broad vision, in terms of the scaling up. I mean, we all know that in terms of either you are a volume player or you're a margin player. Where do you see yourself in this paradigm? Because I'm assuming that, when you look at AMCs, when you look at manufacturers, I mean, in terms of the margins, they already are feeling a lot of the pressure, right? There's a lot of regulatory headwinds, right? And in that, you as Squirrel are looking at specific niche buy.
Sure.
Does that worry you? Or do you think that's something that will be compensated by the reach and the breadth of the product in its 5 or 10 year future?
So I'm a big believer that God lies in execution. Okay, so I think ideas are available dime a dozen. How well you are able to execute and see that idea through is what defines success. So I have no doubt in my mind that if you have to create value, this is the route that you have to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, how well we are able to execute is on our shoulders and our capability. The other thing that I want to just quickly highlight is, you talked about margins and the fact that they are dwindling. I just want to say that this is not just happening in financial services business. This is the new mantra of the business.
Yes.
So there was a simple equation where you had number of consumers multiplied into the margin was equal to the revenue or the profit that you could make. If this is the equation, one thing is categorically clear that margins are coming down.
Mm.
So you have an option either to stay with the same number of consumers and lower margins and make lesser profit or revenue. The other model is that the margins are definitely going to come down. You increase the number of consumers and therefore improve your probability and chances of making money. So margins getting lower is happening every damn place.
Yeah.
Whether it is e-com, whether it is food. Today, I would argue that the way the food tech is shaping up, it is probably cheaper to order out than cook at home, right? At a certain economic scale. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Similarly, it is we are going towards shared housing also now. That's the next buzzword in the next coming 5 years. You see, from co-working, we are going to go to co-living. You will now see a situation where it will be easier for you to just rent a house where everything is taken care of and you focus on your core business of whatever work that you do. So I think margins everywhere are going to shrink. The business will have to be done at scale. The other way to do it is that you understand that, okay, I will be a smaller player and this is the number that I will make, right? So low margins, fewer customers, and the output profit or revenue.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very small and beautiful model to say, I'm happy to live within this money and I will go and live in a small town and I will basically survive. I don't have aspirations to do that. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think those are the two choices that are for business models that are emerging, that you stay small, stay happy, or then you try and scale.
What about if you go above in terms of customer positioning?
Right.
I mean, for instance, we look at a lot of robo-advisor platforms, right? I mean, everybody does, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty easy to get your hands on. And one realizes very quickly that, as your ticket size grows, trust and relationship and advice becomes more important than automation.
Correct.
Right? And when you are in the mass market bucket, automation, distribution, convenience plays a bigger role. Right?
Yeah.
Because I think it's as you go up the value chain in terms of your own spending power, you care much more about how it's kind of being allocated.
Value at
right?
risk is much higher.
Right. So, I mean, do you think like can we see maybe a Squirrel focused on the ultra rich in the future? Because you obviously look at, this is a very blue sky question, obviously,
sure, yeah,
right?
Bespoke solutions.
Because, at the end of the day, you're already playing a lot of emphasis on the content side, on the experience side, on the curation side, right? Which ultimately is naturally valued in the premium belt. Do you see that? Do you see that as a space worth getting into, or you want to focus the next, I would say, short to medium term on the mass market, young Indian urban play?
And there's a scale margin trade-off there as well.
Right. So I think clearly that's also a large opportunity. And I know there are a few players who are trying to go after that opportunity. We don't think we have the right brand and the kind of product positioning to go after that. We are building for a different customer audience altogether, right? And therefore, in our roadmap for the next 3, 4, 5 years, we don't think we will go there. But let me give the other example. What is happening is that those consumers sometime are also jumping buckets.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
We've never reached out. That is not RTG. But that doesn't stop somebody from coming and using a platform.
Yeah.
And in the last 1 month, we've had users who have just come, downloaded the app organically, and straight away invested 1.5 crore rupees. And our teams are also kind of shocked, saying, where did this come from?
Right?
We have average AUM per user of 6,500, which has now been built bit by bit over the last 2.5 years. So we are saying, where did this come from?
So you see it as like it kind of came naturally as an optimization play for them, it seems?
Yeah, there are those consumers in that category also, who are young, who are smart, who are tech savvy, and probably they're not seeing value in their advisors. And more importantly, they have a very good handle of what they want to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they didn't come in for the spare change
feature.
They exactly knew what they wanted to buy.
Yeah.
And the platform is, to that extent, open architecture. They come and consume the product. Now, I don't think as a brand or our content, we are actually, I actually reached out to him and spoke to him. But
right.
I wanted to understand
What brings him here? Right.
And he was a very well-heeled guy. He understood what he bought, the risk that he bought. He took a punt. He came around the elections time. So he knew what he was getting into. And I don't think our content would have appealed to him, because that is too simple.
You got it.
Right?
Yeah.
He's an evolved user.
He liked the interface. He liked the product.
Absolutely.
He liked
the convenience.
And I guess it's also a factor of sometimes we think that rich people don't like discounts.
Yeah.
Or rich people don't like a good bargain, or it's not the case, right? Everybody likes it at the end of the day.
So I think there is always that part of that user base that may get attached, but not necessarily our design and our focus.
On that, I would say surprise inbound transaction that you ended up on. Would like to say congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Finding the time, and it's been 1 hour 2 minutes, my friend.
Yeah,
so
it's one of our longer ones, and we've thoroughly enjoyed the chat.
Thank you so much. So have I. Thank you for having me.
We always appreciate people from different industries. This is tech and finance, as you put.
Right.
We began with it, so we'll leave it on that note, I guess. Thank you so much for your time again.
Absolutely. So yeah, listeners, please feel free to subscribe to our channel. Drop in your comments. Do not forget to rate the podcast. When you rate, our tallies go up on iTunes, and let's face it, that's an important thing.
It is.
So no, thank you so much. This is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharad Tupran
signing off.